The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Today's stories include Catawba Tribe overcomes major hurdle to opening its first casino, and Kane Realty planning a $1 billion North Hills Innovation District. And we'll begin with Catawba Tribe overcomes major hurdle. Governor Roy Cooper and the Catawba Indian Nation signed a revenue-sharing agreement Friday that clears the way for a Vegas-style gaming to be offered at a planned resort in Kings Mountain, tribal leaders said Saturday. Federal approval is still needed for the type of gaming agreed to by Cooper, but the deal with the state means construction can start now at the site, according to the Catawbas. The Rock Hill-based tribe is now a big step closer to making good on its more than seven-year effort to open a casino in North Carolina. Besides bingo halls, North Carolina has two casinos, both operated by the Eastern Band of the Cherokees in Cherokee and Murphy. In a Catawba Nation news release, Chief Bill Harris called the agreement the key step in bringing economic benefits and thousands of jobs from our casino project to the citizens of North Carolina. The tribe would own and operate the planned $273 million Two Kings Casino Resort, about a half hour west of Charlotte. A temporary gaming facility at the site could be ready to open by the fall, Harris said. The Observer previously reported. Developer Wallace Chivas of Greenville, South Carolina, is developing the casino for the tribe. The agreement between the tribe and the state allows for Class 3 gaming, pending approval by the U.S. Department of the Interior. Under the Federal Indian Gaming Regulatory Act, Class 3 gaming includes such Vegas-style games as roulette, craps, and keno. Card games, including blackjack, baccarat, and chimendifer, and slot machines. Tribal leaders don't foresee any special difficulties obtaining federal approval, Catawba Nation Tribal Administrator Elizabeth Harris told the Charlotte Observer in an email Saturday. That's because the North Carolina agreement is closely modeled after a compact that Interior has approved for another tribal nation, she said. The tribe, meanwhile, is permitted to proceed with Class 1 and Class 2 gaming at the Kings Mountain site, which includes bingo and other games, Harris said. The tribe's agreement with the state calls for payment terms to the state that are similar to North Carolina's compact with the Cherokee casinos, Harris said. For the Catawba's exclusive right for live gaming, the state will receive a revenue percentage projected to reach $5 million to $10 million a year, she said. To defray state costs for sports and horse wagering oversight, North Carolina will receive a flat fee of $191,000, according to Harris. $1 million a year will go into a foundation to benefit the Catawba, other state and federally recognized tribes, and the local community. The foundation could eventually receive $7.5 million annually, tribal leaders said. The casino is expected to generate millions of dollars in state tax revenues through taxes on vendors and employees, Harris said. And the Catawbas agreed to make payments in lieu of taxes to Cleveland County. Harris called the agreement the key step in bringing economic benefits and thousands of jobs from our casino project to the citizens of North Carolina. Cooper's office did not have an immediate comment on the deal Saturday. The tribe will now begin building the first phase of the project, a preliminary casino gaming site expected to open this fall, according to Harris. The $60,000 square foot facility off Dixon School Road near Interstate 85 will include at least 130 slot machines, a restaurant, and other basic amenities, Harris previously told The Observer. Eventually, the facility will be replaced by a larger casino resort. The first phase will require an investment of between $80 million and $100 million and would include money for road improvements to handle the added traffic, she said. It was not immediately clear where all the investment money would come from. In the tribal news release, Kings Mountain Mayor Scott Nesler is quoted as saying his city will become a major economic engine in North Carolina. Nesler thanked the Catawba Nation for extending their hand of partnership in making this dream a reality. On Tuesday, Kings Mountain City Council will hold the continuation of a public hearing on plans by casino developer Chivas to build nearly 600 homes and luxury apartments nearby. Chivas has requested a rezoning through a limited liability corporation to allow for housing on nearly 83 acres on the opposite side of I-85 from the casino. Casino revenues also will contribute to a Catawba-backed education fund for members of federal and state-recognized tribes, according to the tribe. The fund also will support initiatives involving environmental conservation, economic development, public services, recreation, and entertainment, Catawba leader said. The Catawba Nation held a groundbreaking for the casino in July and has done site work needed for construction to start. Gambling is prohibited in South Carolina, and the Catawbas looked across the border for at least 7 years. The tribe finally won federal approval in March to buy 16 acres for the project. The U.S. Interior Department put the land in trust, a designation that gave the tribe the right to develop a casino. Last summer, the Eastern Band of the Cherokees sued the Catawbas and the Interior Department to try to stop the casino. The suit, which is still pending, claims political pressure from Chivas prompted the government to clear the way for the casino without congressional approval. Principal Chief Richard Sneed of the Eastern Band could not immediately be reached for comment Saturday. Next, Kane Realty planning $1 billion North Hills Innovation District. Kane Realty unveiled on Monday an ambitious $1 billion addition to its North Hills development in Raleigh, pitching it as a potential destination for tech and life sciences companies. Kane, one of the most influential developers in the Triangle, is calling the expansion the North Hills Innovation District. It will include an 18-story office tower, a 200-unit apartment complex, and a 20,000-square-foot food hall. Josie Reeves, director of design for Kane Realty, said that the project is a signal to the market that Raleigh will continue to be a destination for tech-focused companies following the pandemic. It is undeniable what tech and life sciences have done for our region, Reeves said in an interview with the News and Observer. It is exciting to think about what the impact they can continue to have if we evolve with them, keep them here, and make sure they have a multitude of offerings that speak to them. Tech and life sciences companies, she added, want to be surrounded by like-minded companies. So Kane plans to be thoughtful about the types of companies it brings into the space. Kane said it hopes to break ground on the planned apartments this summer and the office tower in the fall. The food hall is slated for summer of 2024. Rivas said her company has worked on plans for the Innovation District for several years, but thanks to the pandemic, a focus on outdoor spaces had become critical in the past year. The 33-acre district was always going to be centered around 4 acres of open space, she said, but they've now designed the entire campus to incorporate outdoor spaces that can be used for work. We feel like there are elements of office life that are forever changed, Rivas said, namely that people will want to incorporate the outdoors more into their daily work routines. There's going to be lots of outdoor space for all of the vertical projects, she said. Big terraces, outdoor rooms and furnishings, gathering spaces, all of them very open and flexible. You might see departments meeting outside for work, but not inside. Dominating how the outdoor space will look is the Big Branch Creek, which bisects the district. Kane will invest heavily in natural spaces around the creek, including the creation of dining and gathering areas next to it and several pedestrian bridges that will cross it. There will also be trails that connect to the Capital Area Greenway. Reese said the company is taking seriously its ecological responsibilities when building around the creek and is working with several agencies to ensure it maintains the creek's health. In addition to the natural space, the headline amenity for the project is the 2-story food hall. Reese said Kane wants to take its time finalizing how the food hall will look, adding it has to have a reason to exist. What is going to be different about this food hall, she said, it has to have a differentiator because there are already food halls in the city. 2 food halls are located in downtown Raleigh, Transfer Company Food Hall and Morgan Street Food Hall. Each have a series of stalls run by local restaurants and food purveyors. So far, it's the second floor of the food hall that is driving those conversations, with ideas of live music and event space being floated. We are being thoughtful about that, she said. The pandemic has not slowed down Kane Realty's plans for Raleigh. In addition to the Innovation District, the real estate company is forging ahead with a planned $350 million redevelopment of the JCPenney store in a different section of North Hills. And late last year, the development company also won a critical rezoning of property it controls south of downtown, where it hopes to build a soccer stadium and more office towers in the coming year. It's also yet another data point that shows companies aren't losing complete confidence in the future of office spaces in the wake of a pandemic that has sent workers home. Several big-name tech companies in the Triangle have reiterated their commitment to in-person work going forward. Most notably, video game company Epic Games revealed earlier this month that it had bought the Cary Town Center Mall for $95 million, with plans to build a new headquarters there by 2024. Rivas said that Kane doesn't expect interest in the region to slow down because of the pandemic. In fact, it could potentially benefit from a migration that appears to be underway from high-cost cities like San Francisco and New York to other parts of the country. But the Triangle has to be ready to absorb that potential growth, she said. If we can have these plans ready to go, then we have, as a region, that much of a better chance to capture the big and small fish, she said. We have to be positioned to keep talent in our region. If you want a closed suburban campus, she said, the Triangle can offer that, but the region can also offer a more urban environment as well. It is all about options and choices, she said. We are absolutely getting calls and interest from companies that are thinking about what is the right place for to be. We are on that list, but we won't get them if we don't have compelling offers. North Hills Innovation District is about creating that. This story was produced with financial support from a coalition of partners led by Innovate Raleigh as part of an independent journalism fellowship program. The NNO maintains full editorial control of the work. Next, Mega Millions lottery ticket in Michigan wins $1.05 billion prize. Someone in Michigan bought the winning ticket for the $1.05 billion Mega Millions jackpot, which was the third largest lottery prize in U.S. history. The winning numbers for Friday night's drawing were 4, 26, 42, 50, and 60, with a mega ball of 24. The winning ticket was purchased at a Kroger store in the Detroit suburb of Novi, the Michigan Lottery said. Someone in Michigan woke up to life-changing news this morning, and Kroger Michigan congratulates the newest Michigan multimillionaire, said Rachel Hurst, a regional spokeswoman for the grocery chain. She declined to comment further. The Mega Millions top prize had been growing since September 15, when a winning ticket was sold in Wisconsin. The lottery's next estimated jackpot is $20 million. Friday night's drawing came just 2 days after a ticket sold in Maryland matched all six numbers drawn and won a $731.1 million Powerball jackpot. The jackpot figures refers to amounts if a winner opts for an annuity paid in 30 annual installments. Most winners choose a cash prize, which for a Mega Millions game would be $776.6 million before taxes. Only two lottery prizes in the U.S. have been larger than Friday's jackpot. Three tickets for a $1.586 billion Powerball jackpot were sold in January 2016, and one winning ticket sold for a $1.537 billion Mega Millions jackpot in October 2018. In Grosse Ile, a suburb of South Detroit, 126 people bought more than 600 tickets for the Friday drawing, but didn't win the jackpot. They hope to win enough money to replace a publicly owned bridge on their island in the Detroit River that has been closed indefinitely for major repairs. The only other transportation option for the island's 10,000 residents is a privately owned toll bridge. We use this to lift our spirits and dream a little bit, said organizer Kyle D. Busseau. Of course, we're open to any help with the bridge, but I can't imagine the winner would want to finance it. The odds of winning a Mega Millions jackpot were incredibly steep, at 1 in 302.5 million. The game is played in 45 states as well as Washington, D.C. and the U.S. Virgin Islands. Next, in new PPP round, officials learn from last year's missteps. Market researcher Dave Cristofaro was down to his last $1,500 and on the verge of laying off his final four full-time employees, down from seven before the pandemic, when he got a loan in May from the Federal Paycheck Protection Program. Getting the $45,000 wasn't easy, Cristofaro said. The website crashed 30 times as he tried to fill out the application. Then the first round of funding ran out. Federal data showed much of it was scooped up by large corporations. In the meantime, business disappeared, including a $69,000 job from a major client. I'm about to tell my employees, hey, we're going to have to stop working, said Cristofaro, 56, who has run Actionable Research Incorporated in Aliso Viejo since 2002. That PPP funding perfectly covered the crater caused by the coronavirus. With the latest $285 billion round of Paycheck Protection Program funding, which kicked off January 11th, federal officials are aiming to avoid the worst missteps of the previous versions, under which the Treasury Department and the Small Business Administration distributed $523 billion in forgivable loans to more than 5 million companies. Some other loan and grant programs reopened because of December's $900 billion relief package and President Biden's $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief plan promises additional aid. Small business owners complained to lawmakers that the Paycheck Protection Program and other aid efforts in Congress, $2.2 trillion CARES Act, were confusing and unfair, and an audit found a potential $3.6 billion went to ineligible borrowers. The process was excruciating for small businesses, said Holly Wade, executive director of the National Federation of Independent Business Research Center. Forms and procedures were confusing. Many owners lacked banking relationships that could have helped them get through the process, she said. The certainty of how they were going to navigate through this was incredibly emotional for many small business owners, Wade said. When they were applying, it was incredibly difficult for many of them to get a hold of their bank to better understand how they were supposed to fill out these applications, how to qualify for the maximum amount that they were eligible for. Discrimination also may have played a role in preventing funds from getting to small businesses run by people of color and women, said Annalise Ladere, Director of Fair Lending and Consumer Protection for the National Community Reinvestment Coalition Advocacy Organization in Washington. The coalition's analysis of the program's loans in the first two rounds found that most of the money went to businesses in wealthy white areas. The organization tested the program's fairness last year with a mystery shopper-type study in which pairs of potential borrowers with similar financial profiles but different races, genders, and ethnic backgrounds telephoned for loan information at national and regional financial institutions, Ladera said. The Black and Latino test borrowers presented stronger financial credentials than the white borrowers in the study, but often were discouraged from applying, she said, receiving less information and being quoted higher rates. Black and Latino women were treated less fairly than men, Ladera said. The new funding round is starting slowly to avoid previous mistakes, with an initial focus on underserved communities, small lenders, and businesses owned by people of color, women, and veterans. The need for more assistance is staggering. More than 400,000 small businesses folded as of July because of the virus. More firms than in a typical year, according to a policy proposal by George Washington University economics professor Stephen Hamilton, released in September by the Brookings Institution. A $1.5 million loan carried Leon Brooks and his Torrance private security business through a series of body blows delivered in 2020 by the economic downturn. Allied Protection Services lost all but one contract, and revenue fell to about $200,000 a month from about $800,000 before the virus shut down his clients, Brooks said, forcing him to lay off 127 of his 273 employees. The rest took pay cuts. The PPP loan should have taken the company through the end of 2020, said Brooks, 58, who started the security firm in 1989 and got a training boost 10 years ago from an entrepreneur education program called Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Businesses, which operates through local community colleges and business schools. But two problems developed, Brooks said. Without explanation, $158,000 of the loan was removed from his account, which I was kind of disturbed about, Brooks said. The bank and the Small Business Administration gave conflicting stories about why the money was taken back, he said, and the matter is still in limbo. I took the PPP and we used it for what we were supposed to use it for, Brooks said. Then, as he approached lenders for a new loan, he said the institutions looked at the PPP money as debt, even though the program is designed so that the loans turn into grants if the proceeds are spent on payroll and various eligible costs, among other conditions. The federal government is saying to me, now you go get your own help. I can go get my own help, but my own help, my bank, is saying that they have to know what I'm going to do with this debt, Brooks said, referring to the PPP funds. That frustration pushed Brooks to take part in a virtual Capitol Hill lobbying campaign this month, put together by Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Businesses. More than 2,000 graduates of the training program held more than 400 online meetings with lawmakers to advocate for additional help, including tax incentives to offset reopening and other costs, according to the advocacy initiative. And next, Duke Energy customers to save $1.1 billion in coal ash cleanup cost. Duke Energy agreed to a settlement with state officials and the Sierra Club that will save North Carolina customers over $1.1 billion in costs they would have had to pay to offset the expense of the Charlotte-based utility's coal ash cleanup. Ratepayers were initially slated to pay for much of the cleanup cost. Duke Energy had long stored coal ash, a byproduct of power production, mixed with water in open pits or basins. A 2014 spill of toxic ash into the Dan River at one of those pits led to a years-long campaign by state and federal officials to clean up the waste. Today's settlement is a win for every Duke Energy customer. I've long held that North Carolinians should not bear the full cost of cleaning up coal ash, and so now we won't. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I'm Pat Perry, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.